This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to this Joy 94.9 podcast. Radiothon is now on, and we need your support. This is our one time a year that we ask you to support Joy so we can continue being a voice for the LGBTI community of Melbourne and beyond. By becoming a member, renewing your membership, or donating to Joy, you will keep out loud and proud LGBTI voices on air and on podcast, and around 50 volunteers work hard around the clock to make them available. We hope you enjoy this podcast. Then we hope you head to joy.org.au to find out how you can support us this radiothon. We still need Joy. Your voice. Your radio station.
It's Tuesday, the 13th of June. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, David Gale.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
I'm David Gale, your host on tonight's Informer.
And I'm Tess Binns. On tonight's show, we'll speak to an employer and a union representative about LGBTI policies in the workplace.
And later on, we'll talk with a member of the Latin community about the one-year anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando.
But first, we're going to take a look at the Pride in Diversity Workplace program, and we'll speak to Dawn Hoff.
Pride in Diversity is Australia's first and only not-for-profit workplace program designed specifically to assist Australian employers with the inclusion of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex employees. Tonight on the line, we're joined by Dawn Hoff.
Hello, great to be here.
Dawn, you're a director of Pride in Diversity. Where did Pride in Diversity come from?
Sure. This started back in around about 2009. The then CEO of ACON, Stevie Clayton, was talking to Stonewall UK about their Diversity Champions program and really saw a need for that here in Australia. While diversity was really taking off and there were employer support programs for different areas of diversity, there was no employer support program for LGBTI inclusion. So ACON and also the Diversity Council of Australia came together with Stonewall in the UK to look at bringing a similar program that was obviously culturally relevant to Australia and also to look at implementing a workplace equality index, which helps to measure and shift inclusion. So it was really an initiative in 2009, which launched in February 2010 and has just gone from strength to strength from there.
So you're sort of born out of the AIDS Council of New South Wales.
That is correct. I mean, it is a national program, so Pride and Diversity is a national program. And I think it's really important to clarify that it's actually not funded by ACON funded monies. So it is a self-sufficient program. We are funded purely through memberships and sponsorships. But we do work nationally across Australia, and our members are certainly not only across Australia, but we also have some international members as well.
Dawn, how do the awards work?
So the awards, I think what's really important to understand is that the awards are not a just submit a nomination process and go from there. It is really a benchmarking instrument, and that's where it differs quite significantly from a lot of the HR-style awards. Employers actually who are submitting for the index, and it is a free service, and you certainly don't have to be a Pride and Diversity member to participate, but they have to actually provide a significant amount of evidence in the key areas that we look at, which will include everything from HR policy to training and education to awareness building to executive support to community engagement, networks and so forth. We ask a series of questions and we ask them to provide evidence to support work that they have done in that area. And then that is all validated against a comprehensive scoring rubric, which has been validated and tested by academic staff at universities across Australia, and it's scored, and basically the awards come out of that scoring. So we have different award categories for that.
With the awards, are you helping employers, or is it just basically you're setting the benchmarks and they're sort of going,
it's setting
for
the
us?
Benchmark.
Yeah. They seem pretty, they're pretty broad, because I've had a look at the website, and we'll put a link up to the website of Pride and Diversity to the podcast after our show. But it's a very, very comprehensive website. There's an awful lot of information on there.
Sure. And there's an AWEI website as well, which is very specifically about the index submission document and the submission process itself. But the awards are actually generated from that benchmarking instrument. And while the awards are nice to have, the real purpose behind the AWEI is to actually measure practice and shift it towards international best practice.
Dawn, who's featuring in these awards?
So we have a number of different award tiers. The highest recognition that you can actually achieve is through the Employer of the Year, and that's obviously the organisation that scored the highest on the benchmarking instrument. But we also have platinum employers that have shown that they are within the top 10 employers 4 out of the last 5 consecutive years. So that's where we really acknowledge longevity and sustainability in their work. It's not just a one-off type event. But to actually achieve platinum, or to achieve gold, or indeed to achieve silver status, is an incredible amount of work. And this year we had ANZ as our Employer of the Year, and we recognised platinum employers Goldman Sachs, PwC, University of Western Australia and Accenture.
Actually, it was interesting to see in this list, I think all 4 big banks finally made it into the list, because up until then, I think there were a couple that were just sort of lagging a little bit behind. And it's actually a very interesting list. You can go into the Platinum Awards list on the website, and it's interesting to see which businesses do actually support LGBTI rights and obviously create better workplaces. What about smaller companies? What about smaller businesses? Do any of them feature in there?
Yes, we have got a couple of small employers. So this year, for the very first time, we actually assessed small employers across the Small Employer Index, which is 150 employees or less, mm-hmm. because obviously larger organisations will have a lot more budget, a lot more flexibility to be able to do things than smaller employers. So we had a cut-down version of the index that specifically addressed LGBTI inclusion in small employers, and we had a couple of the small employers that actually ranked. For example, Bloomberg LP, they were a small employer that actually came out with bronze this year. Public Record Office Victoria was a small employer that came out with bronze this year. And we also had Key Assets, which is a small employer, come out as a gold employer. So we're starting to see small employers really, really look towards what they can do to be more inclusive, which is fantastic.
Yeah. Look, that actually brings me to a question that I wasn't necessarily going to ask you, but like if I was working for a smaller company, because we don't all work for very large corporations.
Sure.
And I felt that, you know, things needed to be moving ahead, what sort of things would you suggest to people, you know, that work for these smaller businesses in order for them to find out more about making their workplaces a safer place for LGBTI people?
Well, look, of course, the first thing I would say is give us a call, because we can certainly assist them with that. But outside of that, I think one of the key areas for small, or any employer for that fact, but for small employers as well, is to actually be visibly inclusive. For so many people, unless there is visibility of inclusion, we can read ourselves out of things. We can assume it's not there, because that's perhaps been our experience in the past. So we're talking about things like our policies. When we talk about family benefits or partners or family, how are we defining that? Are we really inclusive of LGBTI people and their families? And unless we call that out, unless we state that, again, the assumption can be that it's not inclusive.
Yeah.
So I think really being clear around your policies and your practices, but also visible inclusivity. So, you know, celebrating LGBTI days of significance, including changing your language to include all types of families. There are many things that you can actually do that will send a message to your staff that I'm actually safe here. I can be who I am. And ultimately, that's what we're talking about.
Dawn, it's been great talking to you tonight. Thank you so much for your time. Dawn is a director at Pride in Diversity, Australia's first and only non-profit workplace program. Thank you so much for your time tonight, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you.
Bye. One of the recipients of the Platinum Award in the Pride and Diversity Awards, PricewaterhouseCooper, continues to strive to make a great place to work for members of the LGBTI community. Tonight on The Informer, we're joined by Marty Jovic. He's a partner at PwC and a partner sponsor of Glee. Hi, Marty. Are you there?
Hi, David. Excellent. Hi, David. Thanks for inviting me on to chat.
Excellent to have you on the line. Look, can you first tell us what Glee stands for?
Sure. So Glee stands for Gay, Lesbian and Everybody Else. Which is PwC's LGBTI inclusion group.
Marty, what does it take to be on the list?
So I would say it takes a couple of things. The first really being leadership from the top, and that's not necessarily around LGBTI inclusiveness alone. At PwC, our leadership comes around diversity and inclusion and what that means to our culture and our business more broadly. But that really gives us a great guide around LGBTI inclusiveness. And then secondly and equally as important are then the grassroots initiatives that that Glee, as our inclusion group, engage in. And to give you a couple of quick examples, I think they focus both on those that are internal, so for our staff at PwC that identify as LGBTI, and they can cover things like our Sticks and Stones training program or transitioning policy, through to those that are external facing or more about our community more broadly. And a recent example there is working with the Victorian Government and the Pride Centre Board around being the strategic partner on the new Pride Centre being built in Victoria.
Yeah, look, I was just actually thinking, because you've got onto the list, you've been consistent performers. Obviously, you're creating a much better place for people to work in.
Yes, I think maintaining that place is an interesting one because we see it as a recognition of our long-term achievement in this space, but really helps us to continuously think about how we support the LGBT community at PwC and also in the community more broadly.
Marty, how can PwC continue to improve their workplace?
So what we have been thinking about is how do we do a couple of things, really? So two examples are we're looking to extend our Sticks and Stones training, which takes a role-play format and focuses on how you use language appropriately, what does LGBTI mean, and so on. But that's really focused on anybody at PwC, whereas what we're starting to think about now is how do we focus on LGBTI-specific leadership programs for our people to really understand what it is to be an LGBTI leader in our organisation?
Look, it sounds pretty good. I was actually thinking this afternoon, and I had a quick chat to you about this, but, you know, we talk about certainly LNG, but I was thinking about the trans policies. Certain companies are starting to take big initiatives in this area. A friend of mine works for one of the large energy companies, and their company has been recognised quite specifically. What sort of trans policy does your company, PwC, have?
Yeah, this is one I'm really proud of. We were the first PwC organisation globally to introduce a transition policy in 2015. And to kind of summarise it, I suppose it's around providing support around the individual. And so the person that is transitioning, giving them not only time that they can take when it is meaningful to them as a form of support, but also giving them some guidance around you know, how that transition at the workplace might look like, and also for those that are their support group, and that can be nominated by the person that's transitioning, what's some guidance for them so that we're really trying to make it an easier process at PwC to transition if that's what you choose to do so.
So what does the company get out of the recognition?
The recognition is great. We really enjoy it.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
on the surface, it helps us to attract great people and continue to attract great people. But I think for us, it's a little bit more around recognising how we continue to progress around LGBTI inclusiveness at PwC, how we really embed our overarching diversity and inclusion policies, how we really think about LGBTI inclusiveness and what that looks like embedded in our culture. And just to give you an example of what I think we get out of it is, it was recently Idahot in May, and we had a great example of our internal social media platform and how people from the LGBTI community through Glee shared their stories of what Idahot meant to them. And to me, that's something really, really powerful. And I think, this award and the AWEI is a contributing factor to that. Not the only factor, but one that continues to help us embed that LGBTI inclusiveness into our culture.
It's funny how it's great that you're able to attract possibly the best graduates and the best people to work in your workplace because people know that it is a safe workplace. In a way, it seems we'd like to see that it was a redundant thing, that you didn't need to do this because it was just accepted and that everybody did this sort of thing. So I suppose you are great leaders. It is great to have you on the line tonight, Marty, and thank you so much for your time.
No worries, David. Thanks for inviting me on.
We look forward to talking to you again.
Cheers. Chat.
So we've talked to Pride and Diversity about their great workplace programs. We've talked to a recipient of the awards, a very large employer, PwC. And I felt that it was really time to make sure that we talk to somebody that's a little bit further on the ground. We have joining us in the studio tonight, Will Strack. She is an industrial campaigns officer at Victorian Trades Hall. Hi, how are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me here.
Look, it's just great to have you in the studio because I wanted to know, what are the union's perspectives on LGBT policies in the workplace? Right, what have they done?
What have we done?
Yeah.
All right. So what have the unions ever done for us? Is that
the
question?
Yeah. No, but what have you done specifically in the LGBTI acceptance area?
All right. So unions have been involved in this space really since the 1970s.
Yeah.
So a lot of the early work around ending discrimination and the pushing for legislation to protect LGBTIQ people came through union activists, LGBTIQ union activists inside their unions. In the 1980s, unions were at the forefront of the fight against AIDS because, for instance, the nurses' union was confronting that very directly, and unions went out on the ground working very actively to end homophobia and discrimination. In the 1990s, unions worked very hard creating workplace entitlements, so pushing for bargaining workplace entitlements in agreements that did things like recognise same-sex relationships and providing the same rights so that to access things like carer's leave. It used to be that you couldn't access carer's leave because your partner wasn't recognised as your partner at law. And so unions pushed, rather than when those changes couldn't be achieved in law, unions basically pushed to get them in workplace agreements, in rights that applied in the workplace. So, and then most recently we've been campaigning very, very actively in the marriage equality space.
So it sort of seems almost as if you've been in the background but not necessarily right front and centre. I mean, I know that if I go to a marriage equality rally, I will certainly see some members from the union representing different unions and whatever. But it's not like, I don't know, you're certainly not crying about it, but they are basic rights that you've been fighting for.
So in the most recent election campaign, we campaigned out on the ground for marriage equality. So we went out door knocking.
Yeah.
We ran street stalls. So we've been fairly active in that space. We did that along with Equal Love. So one of the things we would say, for instance, in terms of workplace rights, that's a place where unions really can drive the agenda. Whereas in issues like marriage equality, what we would say is that there are lots of organisations that's why they exist and that's what they are front and centre in campaigning in. So what we can do is support that work rather than, we don't need to be at the front of that. There's already people doing that. We can back it in. So I suppose the difference for us in terms of workplace rights is there are programs that are out encouraging employers when they are ready to adopt policies, what we would say is the other way to achieve change is to push for it, maybe when employers aren't necessarily in a space where they'll embrace it. In other words, to work collectively with workers to push for those rights and push for change rather than just waiting for when employers are ready.
Well, how do you train your representatives to deal with LGBTI issues?
So we can train them on the law. So we can train them on anti-discrimination law, and we can also talk to them about new rights that we want to try and achieve in workplaces. So we can put together claims for them that they can take into bargaining or when they're meeting with their employer and talking about things which are about expanding those rights out. So, for instance, for workers who are transitioning in the workplace, we can have claims that say to that employer, we as a group of workers here now want to see these things included. So we can train our people essentially on both the rights and then on what the next steps are.
What about dispute resolutions? Like, you know, I might be represented by a union in a workplace and, you know, maybe they're not, the employer's not allowing me, you know, for example, as you were saying, carers' rights or something else along those areas. So how are your representatives trained specifically with those LGBTI issues?
So we would deal with those issues, I suppose, the same way that we would deal with any discrimination issue, which is, you know, we train our people on how to deal with that. But the thing that, the way that we think about change is it's also something done collectively. Because, you know, we know that 40% of LGBTIQ workers are not out at work because they don't feel safe. So what we would say is one of the best things that you can do is build a group of people around you who support you in your action. So we, if a worker comes and says, I'm experiencing this discrimination, then ideally what we do is we go out and we talk to their, you know, their colleagues at work and say, one of you is experiencing this. This is not good. We want to go together to the employer and say, this is not good enough. We need to fix this thing. And if we do that as a group, it means that that worker doesn't feel isolated and doesn't have to feel like they have to carry the load of making the change that needs to happen in the workplace.
Yeah.
So for us, really, that's in an ideal world, that's the way that we can fix problems, is to go, we operate as a group, that's union, we come together. And so the best thing we can do is, how do we fix this together? How do we go as a group to the employer rather than saying, you're the individual gay man who's experienced discrimination, now you have to follow the legal processes on your own or with the union's, you know, with a union rep to pursue this. In an ideal world, they have the protection of, you know, their colleagues around them.
Yeah, look, I know a friend of mine was working in a particular shop, and he just started to get really pissed off with the employer that was just sort of making homophobic comments.
Yep.
And he, you know, he wanted to broach that subject with the guy that he worked for, but at the same time he was in fear of losing his job.
Yep.
Now, it was a really tiny shop, so in smaller spaces it does become a little bit more difficult, but I suppose it's just a negotiation, and he was more worried about losing his job than standing up and being able to say, well, you know, I don't think those sorts of comments are the sort of things that people really respect. And also there's that age difference and there's that attitudinal difference.
Yeah, that story is incredibly common. So there are lots, we know that there are lots of small acts of homophobia and transphobia that happen in workplaces that never get reported, that people basically, they'll choose to leave a workplace rather than raise the issue because they don't feel safe in doing that, and because they would rather, you know, hang around, earn the money until they can get themselves another job rather than confront it. So one of the things we're doing at Trades Hall is we're in the process of putting together some kits, if you like, so information kits, but also the capacity for workers to come together and tell us what the big challenges are now. So we know that homophobia is a big issue. We know that gendered violence is an issue. So gendered violence is violence perpetrated against anybody in the workplace who doesn't fit a gender stereotype. So women experience gendered violence, but so do LGBTIQ people because they don't fit a kind of dominant stereotype. And that's things like comments. It goes all the way to harassment, physical harassment, and in some cases assault. And we know those things are happening, and we know they're injuring workers. And so what we say, though, is we don't yet, no one has a really clear picture of how much of that is happening. So we're putting together and going through a process of, in the next 6 to 12 months, going out and talking to groups of workers about what the real challenges are now and what the next rights are that we need to push for.
Yeah. Look, we will put a link to Victorian Trades Hall in our podcast after this this episode. And it's great having you in the studio, and we look forward to seeing you again, Will.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
A year ago today, on the 12th of June, in the Orlando gay nightclub Pulse, 49 people were tragically killed in one of the worst gun massacres in American history. The gunman, Omar Mateen, attacked the club with an assault-style rifle. 12 months later, we talked to Christian Cortez Garzon, a member of the LGBTI Latin community, about both remembering that day and the effects the tragedy has had on the Latin community here in Melbourne. Christian, thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Hi, good evening. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Christian, can I ask, looking back to that day 12 months ago, where were you and what was your first reaction to the shooting?
Yes, of course, I actually remember it. I have the clear memory in my mind. It was on a weekend, and of course, because of the time difference, the Orlando tragedy happened at night in American time, but we were just waking up here in Australia. I think so that was a Saturday morning, and I just, you know, looking on social media in the morning, I start seeing some notifications about what is going on. But it wasn't until midday when all the names came out, or most of the names, and we started, or I started realizing that this was Latinx people. Most of them, you know, from Puerto Rican background, Mexican background, and different countries as well. And, you know, I just was in shock. I was very, very sad. I just couldn't believe it. I took it very emotionally, and I expressed my discontent and my sadness in social media as well. And I actually have a couple of friends in that they were in Miami, and because it was Latin night, I wasn't sure if maybe they were there, so I got in contact with them. It was good that they weren't at that Latin night at that moment. Yeah.
So 12 months on, how do you feel you've been able to process that tragedy? Can you see any good coming from such a terrible event?
Look, it's, you know, every single death is very significant, and, you know, thinking of something good coming out of that is quite difficult, but I guess because of the magnitude of the tragedy, it gave us an opportunity to, remember and also have, our voices listen. It's as sad as it was, you know, it drove a lot of attention to many issues on the LGBTI community, particularly the Latinx community, because this Latin American LGBTI people have this contradictory narrative where we are seen as a region that is advancing in LGBTI rights. But on the other side, we have a lot of numbers of people who get killed, transgender people, and lots of violence toward LGBTI people. So the good thing, I think so this is just a day that needs to be remembered every year.
Yeah. Christian, thanks so much for joining us this evening and sharing your thoughts with the Joy community. We look forward to talking with you again.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Have a lovely night.
You too. Bye for now.
That's it for another episode of The Informer. We'll be back tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. to bring you the day's big news. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.